Hearty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports. Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
It's day four at the Africa Cup of Nations football tournament in Gabon, and the Nations Cup spotlight is shining on this Tuesday on Gabon's western coastal city of Port-Gentil. There are two fixtures scheduled. In the opening match, Ghana is going against Uganda in Port-Gentil. The Black Stars of Ghana, four-time Nations Cup champions, but their last Nations Cup title was in 1982, and that's too long of a wait for many Ghanaian football fans. Our VOA football fans will remember the Black Stars advanced to the final at the 2015 Nations Cup in Bata, Equatorial Guinea, where they suffered a heartbreaking 9-8 loss on penalty kicks to neighbor Ivory Coast. The Cranes of Uganda, meanwhile, are playing in their first Nations Cup since 1978. So many Ugandan football fans are clearly looking forward to the Cranes. And if we go back to 1978, yes, the Cranes lost to none other than the Black Stars of Ghana in that 1978 Nations Cup final in Accra by a score of 2-0. In Tuesday evening's second match in Port-Gentil, Mali will be meeting Egypt, winners of a record 7 Nations Cup titles. In Nations Cup results on Monday, Togo and defending Nations Cup champion Ivory Coast played to a scoreless draw, and the Democratic Republic of Congo defeated Morocco 1-0 on a goal by Junior Kananga in the 55th minute. After that loss to the Congolese, Morocco's French coach, Hervé Renard, had this to say.
It was not an easy game, but we didn't concede a lot of opportunities. But only one was enough for DRC to score. We were not efficient in the box offensively. We have some chances and we didn't score. So in football, what is very important is to be efficient, and we were not this evening.
Meanwhile, before Tuesday evening's Ghana-Uganda match kicked off in Port-Gentil, I had a chance to chat with Timothy Donagmai of the VOA's French to Africa service. Let's listen in now as I say, bonjour, Tim.
Okay, bonjour, bonjour, Sonny. I see that your French has improved.
That's about the extent of my French, Tim.
Okay.
What is the atmosphere like in Port-Gentil?
The atmosphere here is, at this time, it's a little bit subdued. I'm at the stadium right now, but unlike in Libreville, where people came to the stadium very early in the morning, here in Port-Gentil, people are still trying to get in and in the stadium. So it's not the kind of atmosphere that we had in Libreville.
Two matches on Tuesday in Port-Gentil. Uganda making its return to the Nations Cup, Tim. Have you seen many Ugandan fans?
In fact, Sonny, I flew from Libreville to Port-Gentil with a group of Cranes fans, and they were very excited. They said they came here to take home the trophy. They said the long drought that the Cranes went through since their last participation in 1978 is going to take to end. It's going to end here in Gabon. So they are very confident that they're going to get great results here.
Tim, can you comment on attendance so far at the matches?
Attendance in Libreville for the inaugural match between host country Gabon and Guinea-Bissau was well attended. The 40,000 seat stadium was almost full. But then when the second match, Cameroon-Burkina Faso, started, most people went home, I guess because of the poor result of their team, but also because the stadium is really far from the city, and it's not easy to find a cab or a bus to ride home at late hours. So some people chose to go home earlier. And one of the fans said that the real measure of attendance in Libreville would be when teams other than the host country team play in Libreville. Then we'll see if really people are excited about this AFCON 2017 in Libreville. And as I told you here in Paul Joachim, the stadium is still empty. I went there. I didn't see many people sitting there. And I also saw on TV for matches in OEM and Franceville. Also, there were scattered fans there. But it's not the kind of attendance that you see in this kind of competition at this level, Tony.
What about security, Tim? Has it been difficult to get around Gabon in your travels, or how would you comment on security?
Security, it's not too bad, but I came in with some crane fans, and here in Port-Gentil, we had to go through immigration as if we were coming from a foreign land, which surprised me since we were coming from this capital city. But we had to give our passport. We even had to check our yellow fever vaccination record. So it's tedious a little bit, but not too bad, not too bad for me.
As we talk, Tim, six matches have been completed at this 31st Africa Cup of Nations. Which teams have impressed you so far, Tim?
So in six matches, we had four draws and two victories, Senegal and DRC. I think the team that really impressed me is Zimbabwe. They came in and they did a very good match. They almost beat Algeria. If it were not for Riyad Mahrez, the African Player of the Year, who scored two goals to level the score. So Zimbabwe has been really a great team here. I also saw Burkina Faso. They brought many young players, and it looks like they have their team play padded down very good, very good ball circulation. So I was impressed by Guinea-Bissau. And also the teams from the North Africa, as usual, very good, but maybe not so lucky as we saw with Tunisia against Senegal, and we saw also Morocco against the DRC.
It was just a few years ago, Gabon co-hosted the Nations Cup with Equatorial Guinea. How would you describe their preparations and organization so far, Tim?
The decision of Gabon authorities to organized this AFCON 2017 was a controversial one, because there are some people here who say, okay, it's a good thing to have the whole Africa here in Gabon and celebrating football. There are others who say that Gabon has other priorities. They say Gabon is going through an economic crisis due to the decrease of the oil prices on the world market. So there are many social issues that have not been attended to, and they said that should have been the priority of the government. And others also say that there is a political crisis, an electoral crisis here in Gabon that has yet to be resolved. And as you know, opposition leader Jean Ping considers himself the president elect of Gabon. And so that has created a lot of tension between political factions here in Gabon. And so what I saw when I came in was that when you go to the city, city like Libreville, you just see a few fans here and there, but you don't have the feeling that something is happening in that big city. It's almost like nothing is happening. And I spoke to several cab drivers. They said, well, it's not our priority right now. It's not our priority. We are trying to survive right now, so we don't have the money to celebrate football. So, and organization-wise, that has been affected. And so when we came in, they were still working on some of the new stadiums, like here in Port-Gentil. I can see that they are still touching up things here and there, cleaning up, mopping, and so it's not the last experience of the last AFCON didn't really change a great thing in the way things are being done here.
Finally, Tim, as you mentioned, we've had four draws so far in the tournament, relatively low-scoring competition. Do you think we're going to see more goals as the tournament progresses?
I hope so. I hope so. I think right now the teams are fresh, so they can defend and they can run and everything. But once they get a little bit tired, then we'll see more goals. And also once they get to know how the other teams play, then they will be able to adjust their game and try to get more goals. So I'm excited. I'm hopeful, optimistic that we're going to see some goals here.
Well, I look forward to talking with you again, Tim, later, maybe later this week, definitely later in the tournament. If I can make a special request, can you say, and that's the sunny side of sports in French?
Voilà, et c'est donc le sunny side, le côté, le sport ensoleillé de Sony. Voilà.
Thanks, Tim. That's Timothy Donaghmai of the VOA's French to Africa service. And Tim was speaking with us from Port-Gentil, Gabon. January 17th is the birthday of the late, great Muhammad Ali, who died last year. The champion boxer would have been celebrating his 75th birthday today. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, the VOA's Adam Phillips takes a look at Ali's early life and its impact.
Muhammad Ali was born Cassius Marcellus Clay Jr. in Louisville, Kentucky, on January 17, 1942, to a poor family. One day, when Cassius was 12, someone stole his beloved bicycle. A white policeman named Joe Martin heard Clay crying and vowing to beat up the thief. On the spot, Martin offered to mentor the boy at his boxing gym downstairs as a way to channel his anger. In 1960, just 6 years later, Cassius Clay would win Olympic gold in Rome.
The most popular USA winner was the lighthearted Cassius Marcellus Clay V in white here, who easily defeated Poland's Zbigniew Patrykowski. Cassius Clay, the winner for the USA.
Legend has it that back in Kentucky, Cassius Clay angrily threw his gold medal into the river because of the racism he encountered in Louisville. Still, he was quickly snapped up by a small group of Louisville investors who sensed his promise, says New York University history professor Jeffrey Sammons, who doesn't really believe that Ali actually threw his medal away, but the author of Rebel with a Cause and Beyond the Ring, The Role of Boxing in American Society, says that all the hype around Cassius Clay was certainly real enough.
He becomes a Madison Avenue creation, a breath of fresh air. Boxing had grown stale. There were all kinds of issues with organized crime. They saw in this young, brash Cassius Clay someone who would make boxing marketable in a way that it once had been. He modeled himself on, in some ways, Jack Johnson, because he talked to his opponent, but on the other hand, on Gorgeous George, who was this foppish wrestler who had all this shtick, you know, with perfume and blonde hair and effeminacy, etc., that he was the beautiful one. And, of course, young Clay referred to himself as beautiful, but also as the greatest.
This is the legend of Cassius Clay, the most beautiful fighter in the world today. This I predict, and I know the score. I'll be champ of the world in 64.
This patter earned Cassius Clay the nickname the Louisville Lip.
Many people didn't think that he was for real, that he was more mouth than skill or talent. And of course, many of these opponents were not very skillful boxers, or they were well past their prime.
As when, in November 1962, Clay fought Archie Moore in Los Angeles. The man fans dubbed Ageless Archie entered professional boxing 7 years before Clay was born. Clay accurately predicted before the fight, "Don't block the aisle and don't block the door. You will all go home after round four."
Ripping punches by Clay and Moore goes down. Cassius raises his hands over his head and it's all over. Clay wins by a fourth round knockout as predicted.
Soon bigger bouts were in the offing. Ali had won all 19 of his professional fights when he challenged Sonny Liston for the heavyweight championship of the world. Hulking and powerful, with a criminal record and alleged ties to the mafia, Liston accepted Clay's challenge. The fight was set for February 25, 1964, in Miami Beach, Florida. During the run-up to the bout, Clay continually taunted Liston to reporters, calling him a big, ugly bear who even smells like a bear.
"I'm handsome, I'm fast, I'm pretty, and can't possibly be beat. If you like to lose your money, be a fool and bet on Sonny."
When Ali showed up for the weigh-in the night of the match, the betting odds were 8-1 against him. Astoundingly, Clay vanquished Liston in the seventh round in a technical knockout.
"Clay has won! Clay has won!"
Then the new heavyweight champion of the world does something else, perhaps even more dramatic. Immediately after the fight, he announces that he had converted to the Nation of Islam, that he was changing his name from Cassius Clay to Muhammad Ali. "Cassius Clay is a slave name," he said. "I am Muhammad Ali, a free name. It means beloved of God, and I insist people use it when they speak to me." For the Sunny Side of Sports, I'm VOA's Adam Phillips in New York.
Keep on sunny side, always on sunny side. Keep on sunny side of life. It'll help us every day. It'll brighten all our ways when we keep on sunny side of life. When we keep on sunny side of life."
Joining us once again here in Studio 22 is my VOA colleague, Doug Bernard. Sporty greetings, Doug.
Sporty greetings. Great to be here, Sonny.
Welcome back, Doug. What is trending in sports social media?
Several stories and a lot of people talking about what's going on down under the Australian Open. So let's just take a quick look. This is, of course, the second day of the Australian Open. And today, Novak Djokovic reached the second round. He defeated Spain's Fernando Verdasca in straight sets, 6-1, 7-6. And that was quite a victory for the 12-time Grand Slam winner, Djokovic. Also, in men's play, Rafael Nadal also reached the second round. He beat Germany's Florian Mayer 6-3, 6-4, 6-4. And Djokovic will next face either Denis Istomin or Ivan Dodig, depending on how those two play out. And Rafael Nadal, who has not had much luck with the Grand Slam title for several years now, since 2014, will be playing Marcos Baghdatis in the next round. Now, over on the women's side, a lot of eyes on Serena Williams. You know, she's been injured a bit lately. There have been concerns about her health.
The newly engaged
Serena Williams. She has advanced to the second round herself.
Okay.
She beat, Belinda Bencic. I'm not familiar with her. She's apparently a Swiss player. She beat her 6-4, 6-3 in just 79 minutes. Now, again, I said, you know, there were concerns about Serena's health. And while this game only lasted 79 minutes, apparently it was like 35 degrees at Celsius play. So it was just boiling hot there on the courts. Anyway, she did well. And Serena Williams will now face Luchi Safarova in the second round. And, you know, a lot of eyes on her to see if she's going to be able to kind of break a record, her record, with 23 Grand Slam singles titles. So we will be watching.
What's your take, Doug? Do you think she can do it down under, win that 23rd Slam?
If she continues the kind of commanding play that she exhibited today, I think she's got a great shot. She is a ferocious competitor. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I have a quote here. She's saying, you know, she's playing. She says, I have nothing left to lose. Every match I'm playing for fun. I get to travel the world, and I do what I do best, play tennis. So that, to me, sounds like a player who's pretty confident about her skills.
What else is trending out there, Doug?
Well, there were a lot of W flags at the White House yesterday. And I don't mean W for George W. Bush. That's the famous blue and white Cubs win, the big W flag. The president, President Obama, one of his last official duties as president, welcomed the Chicago Cubs to the White House for a great moment. And of course, Barack Obama, famously an adoptive son of Chicago. The Cubs won last year, or excuse me, well, yes, 2016, the World Series, their first win in 108 years. The president taking time to talk a little bit about not just, you know, the thrill of victory and, as he said, about both him and Chicago's Cubs. They said it would never happen. And here we both are. But he also took a little time to kind of think about what sports means. This president is very famously a big sports fan. Baseball, basketball, football, all kinds of sports he likes to participate himself. And he spoke about what sports means at the White House. Let's take a listen.
That brings me to the other thing that was so special about this championship, and that's just the guys behind me, the team. They steamrolled the majors this year with 103 win record. All you had to know about this team was encapsulated in that one moment in Game 5, down 3-1, do or die, in front of the home fans when David Ross and John Lester turned to each other and said, I love you, man. And I said, I love you, too. It was sort of like an Obama-Biden moment.
Great way for the president to end out there, of course, referring to his bromance, I suppose you could say, his close friendship with Vice President Joe Biden. So a great moment there at the White House, and really one of the last official duties, certainly the last chance for the president, I think, to really hold a public event. And this is one that I know meant a lot to him, being an adoptive Chicagoan and being a huge sports fan himself.
One of the social media trends I saw from that White House ceremony, Doug, that he gets a free lifetime pass to all,
oh, really?
To all Cubs games.
Wow.
So
well,
doesn't have to worry about paying like the rest of us.
That would come in handy. of course, he's the president, not going right back to Chicago. He'll be staying here with the family in Washington for a little while so his two daughters can finish up school, which is, I think, very generous. But certainly at some point, it's a fair bet that he will be using that pass, I imagine. There's just one other item, if I may. You know, of course, we saw the Packers, the Green Bay Packers, and Dallas Cowboys duke it out this weekend. The Packers won that game as football teams are steadily advancing toward the Super Bowl. There is something flowing around out there on the internet. People just kind of can't believe. I mean, some of us take our sports very seriously, but there's a clip of tape that's floating around a lot. Got a lot of people talking, making jokes. He's a Dallas Cowboys fan. He's watching on one of those big screen TVs at home, and the Cowboys are defeated, and he's so angry he literally jumps up out of his chair and he runs at the television, kind of half demolishing it, and then it not being enough, he actually just has to there's an image of Aaron Rodgers up on the screen because the cameras take to him, and he just couldn't take it, so he just kind of starts punching the image of Aaron Rodgers on the TV. I don't know that that's I think maybe he needs a little sports timeout maybe, but a lot of people talking about that on Twitter and on social media, having some fun with that.
Thanks, Doug. VOA's Doug Bernard. And that wraps up the January 17th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks also to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. And thanks to VOA engineer John Dryden. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. And that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In a recent press conference, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry made clear that the United States has been more deeply engaged in more places to greater effect than at any time in American history. This is especially true of Africa. We have worked long and hard with country after country in Africa, with governments and civil society every single day, to combat hunger, to increase digital access, to train the leaders of tomorrow, said Secretary Kerry. One of the most enduring efforts of President Barack Obama may be the Young Leaders Initiatives, and particularly the Young African Leaders Initiative. In Nigeria, the United States took the lead in helping the country through a difficult election process and in the fight against the terrorist group Boko Haram. We've helped the Somalians fight back against Al-Shabaab. We have worked diligently to promote peace in South Sudan and worked with the region to try to bring people together and turn away from the potential of challenged and failing governments, said Secretary Kerry. The U.S. has helped push back against any number of violent extremist groups, including most recently supporting the Libyans in their fight against Daesh in Sirte, Libya. Together with its international partners, the United States led the fight to assist countries battling against Ebola, stopping the spread of the disease in its tracks. It wasn't easy, said Secretary Kerry, but President Obama made the daring choice of sending some 3,000 or so American troops there to build capacity so the United States could deliver health care along with the French and British. As a result, hundreds of thousands of people whom it was predicted would die by Christmas of 2 years ago were saved. And through the President's emergency plan for AIDS relief, the U.S. has brought the world to the threshold of the first AIDS-free generation in 30 years. In the years ahead, the U.S. will continue its mission in Africa and around the world of advocating on behalf of democratic values, human rights, including the freedom of the press, and contributing to the global goals of stability, prosperity, and peace.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On Friday, January 20th, the 45th President of the United States, Donald J. Trump, will be sworn into office. VOA will be there and will broadcast the presidential inauguration live from 1600 UTC to 1800 UTC to audiences around the world. Tune in as we begin the next chapter in American history, right here on VOA.
Tuesday on Health Chat, host Lenore Modou will discuss improving nutrition, fighting non-communicable diseases, with guest Tamba Ray Stevenson, founder and CEO of Women Advancing Nutrition, Dietetics and Agriculture, WANDA. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-619-3111. Health Chat this Tuesday at 1730 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, Gambian President Yahya Jammeh fired 12 ambassadors after they called for him to step aside and allow the newly elected opposition leader Adama Barrow to take power, a recommendation he has also heard from ECOWAS, the African Union, and the United Nations. That's right here on the next Straight Talk Africa at 1830 UTC.